Can I leave at 10 o'clock after my presentation?
Chairperson will attend to that. Chairperson?
No? 11 o'clock. I mean, 11 o'clock. Can I leave at 11 o'clock?
Yeah, no, look, as long as you'll be available for engagement.
Yes, now I'll do my presentation at 20 past 10.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
Bye.
Now, unmute.
Chairperson?
Hello?
Yes, we can.
I can start now. I just wanted to just give me 2 minutes.
Okay, Chair.
Perfect. Don't forget to tell the Chair.
Oh, yes. You said you're going to leave what time?
The Chief Whip is going to see me at 12 o'clock.
At 12 o'clock, okay.
Yes.
Thank you, Honorable Members. Let me take this opportunity to formally open this meeting.
Recording in progress.
By extending a word of welcome to all of you. This is a meeting where the Select Committee on Transport, Public Works and Infrastructure and Public Service Administration is dealing with the amendment to the Civil Aviation Act and that is sponsored by the Department of Transport, having had an opportunity to sit on the matter in the last two meetings. We then invited members of the public to engage with the bill, and as a result thereof, today we are having the benefit of receiving a presentation from those that made comments. And indeed, in terms of the agenda that is tabled before us, we will then formally ask the committee secretary to present the apologies to the meeting. Over to you, Trevor.
Thank you, Chairperson. As I've already alluded, we have received two apologies from Honorable Matevula. She's traveling to Cape Town. Number two is for Honorable Mama Rakane. She's attending a joint standing committee meeting. And then apology number three is for Honorable Moshodi. She's going to leave at 12. She's got a meeting with the Chief Whip of the
Thank you. Do we have any from the political office of the department, the ministry? Having said that, let's then agree that those are the apologies that we have received, and we will then get an opportunity to go through the agenda just to sensitize the participants in terms of how our meeting will be structured. We will have oral submission by Mr. Fanseid from the Independent Aviation Consultant. And also Mr. Herman Werdenboer from the Legal Aviation Consultant. I hope my pronouncement is correct. Then the third submission will be from Mr. Keith Story, the CEO of the Commercial Aviation Association of Southern Africa. Then it will be the response by the Department of Transport to the oral submission. And then we will then get the responses by the Parliamentary Legal Advisor, the State Law Advisor, to the oral and written submission. Then it will be questions and answers and then deliberations and the minutes. I wanted to propose that with the minutes, we share them to the next meeting, Sibeka, for the purpose of the reasons that were advanced last week for the purpose of the postponement on the item. Having said that, let us we have our legal advisor today in the meeting. Do we have our legal advisors together?
Yeah. Chairperson, I saw Mr. Jenkins, Advocate Jenkins, logged in. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm here, Chair. I'm here.
Thank you.
I'm completely in the meeting. Thank you, Chair. I'm here.
100%, you're correct. We are happy with that. Let us then, without any waste of time, then allow the first submission. Mr. Fante, the floor is yours.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, Mr. Fante.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity to address you. You may well ask, why do I go to the trouble of being persistent and making comments on this particular bill? The reality is I've dealt with legislation first in 1990 when we changed the legislation in terms of air service licensing in South Africa, thereafter the creation of ATNS, ATAXA, the Civil Aviation Authority Act in 1998, and then finally I was involved with the original Civil Aviation Act 2009. So I have a very pertinent interest in the matter. And if I may say so, I believe, and if I could go to my presentation now at this time, that if the host can just enable participant screen sharing for me, then I would like to just continue with some comments. The main emphasis being, Mr. Chairman, is that we need to have a realistic and workable Civil Aviation Act for the next 10 years. We only seem to be able to get a change in the Act every 10 years. So whatever is endorsed by your committee will be what the aviation industry will have to work with and abide by in the next 10 years. So the emphasis is, if I look at from your website, the slide on the right-hand side, the emphasis is that you have an oversight function, and that really calls for openness and participation, and hence my involvement really is I would like to bring my share to ensure that you are fully informed to make an informed decision as far as the proceedings of this bill is involved. So I'd just like to touch on a few things. I'm not going to go into detail in the slides. I've made the submission to you in that regard. But the first thing I need to stress, Mr. Chairman, is on the background to the memorandum. There the statement says, yes, that...
My apology, Mr. Fante. We have requested to be given an opportunity to share the document. Let's just check as whether either Enrico or Supeta have done that, so that as you engage, you have the document flooded.
Right. Can I start and show? Okay. I started screen sharing.
Great.
So if I can just enable. Yes, there it is. You have the slides now?
Yes, indeed, indeed. You can proceed.
If I just activate my site now, because yes. Are you unable to follow?
Yes, we are following. We are following.
Thank you.
Through.
Right. The first thing I want to touch on, Mr. Chairman, and your committee members, is the description of the background and purpose in the memorandum. What has to be understood very clearly is in 2009, ASIP, the Aviation Safety Investigation Board, was established. The only issue is the Department of Transport never staffed that entity. And the real reason is that they could not obtain the funding from Treasury. So I understood that Treasury said, you want to create ASAP, you find the money within your allocated budget. And from 2011, 2010, when the Act was really promulgated, there's been no attempt to staff ASAP. So the issue to say is, practical aspects is not quite correct. It's really a clear statement and an issue of funding. And unless there is a commitment from the department this time around to staff ASAP, then we're really wasting our time in making all the amendments to the Act. And finally, on that aspect, we need to make sure that as ASAP has existed as this South African Civil Aviation Authority, I believe there's wording that needs to be added to state a juristic person known as the Aviation Safety Investigation Board, established by Section 10 of the Civil Aviation Act, shall be deemed to have been established in terms of by this Act. So this is something I think that the committee needs to consider and that the legal advisors should give attention to. As far as the issue is on the definitions, Mr. Chairman, I found this to be quite surprising. I can't help but tend to think that the definition of an air service has been slipped in since the last portfolio committee meeting, because the issue really comes is there are significant changes now to this definition, and it have sequential impact on the Air Services Licensing Act. And the big challenge comes in with the deletion of the exemptions. Now, if that exemptions are deleted, that basically means an air service is basically every flight that takes place in South Africa where there's a passenger involved really requires an air service air operating certificate. I don't think that's been an intent here. I really need to stress to the legal advisors, I believe this is a major conflict, and you really should retain the original definition of the Air Services Act of 115. Because the big challenge comes in, and I note in the bill as well, there's no mention of subsequent amendment to the Air Services Licensing Act. With a change of the definition of air service, one would now expect that that will have to be carried over into the Air Services Licensing Act. So that needs attention, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, then my old pet one as well is the issue of changes from the wording of director to that of commissioner. It's really, as I've said here, many parts of the world, the CIAs are headed by a director, even a director general, which is probably a better description, because a commissioner, you have the same equivalence as to a commission of oath, for example. So I really don't think there's any need to change that wording from a director to that of a commissioner. And the emphasis I find here as well is that the issue of this, of the cost implication of changes of that word should not be underestimated. I was surprised to note in the portfolio committee response in February that the department said, yes, there is no cost to the department, which is fine. They just change the wording. But they are silent on what happens to the industry. There's all those rewriting of manuals, software programming, licenses, all of that in which the wording has to be changed in the future. So I really believe that that is something that needs the attention from you as a committee. Other aspect, Mr. Chairman, is the issue of aerodrome versus airport. An aerodrome, as is shown in the right top corner there, that is where you just normally have a runway, an airstrip, nothing else. Windsock and the runway is there. That's an aerodrome. That qualifies as an aerodrome. Once you start adding facilities to that to process passengers, freight, or mail, then it becomes an airport. And here we need to have a clear understanding.
My apology, again, Mr. Tafan, the person that is driving the sharing is just stuck on the first slide. Is it you, Enrico, that is that is in charge, or is it Mr. Fansay? Because it means you must be able to run with the screen, Mr. Fansay.
Right, okay. Sorry, I'll end this show and I'll start it again on sharing. Yeah. Is that acceptable to you?
Yeah, now you can move now.
Can you see it now?
Yes.
And if I proceed?
Yes, you can proceed.
Yeah, now my computer has...
Through the chair.
If I
may ask a question. I do not think Mr. Fonseil is presenting. I think it is somebody inside the committee that is actually presenting the slides. Maybe he could actually share his. That is where the glitch is. Sorry to intervene. Thank you.
All right. Let's then agree. Kripeka or Enrico, can you address that?
Right. Can I try again?
Yes, but now the screen is off now. I mean, the presentation is off the screen.
Oh, boy. Okay, I'm trying again. I'm sorry about this, Mr. Chairman. I don't know where the hitch is coming from.
We. Yes, there you are.
Have you got it now?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just going to proceed to where I was previously. Great. Now is on the air service issue. And then the commissioner position, Mr. Chairman. I do believe that there must be clear indication to you as what the cost to the industry will be. That's something that needs to be kept in mind in dealing with amendments to acts and regulations and what the impact there is on the industry. On the definition of aerodrome and airports, Mr. Chairman, there's a need for the department to make a clear distinction. What do they really want to regulate? Is it that aerodrome, that strip, or is it a fully developed airport with facilities, with terminals, with passengers, with immigration, customs, etc.? So that needs to be finalized with the department. They need to make up their mind. Are they dealing with aerodromes? Are they dealing with airports? What do they want to do? So that I leave it at that stage, Mr. Chairman. The next aspect, Mr. Chairman, that is really of consideration to us is the executive responsible for aircraft accident incident investigation. And the question there is if that person is appointed by the CAA and not by ASIP. ASIP is really out of the control. And we've seen already if a person is appointed by the CAA, and the CAA is criticized in the report by that, then the executive is in a difficult position. And we've now seen it's been highlighted with that accident of the Civil Aviation Authority's aircraft, in which there's now a conflict between the current director of civil aviation and the executive manager who's the appointment was not renewed, and his emphasis was that his appointment was not renewed because he criticized the CIA. It is a difficult situation, and that I really believe the executive responsible for that investigation must be an employee of the ASIP and appointed by ASIP and reporting to ASIP. Because otherwise you will have that conflict of it. And it's going to be very interesting once this report is released on this accident, how the situation developed here, how the issue comes about of the oversight of the CIA with itself. So there is serious conflicts there, Mr. Chairman, that I do believe needs to be given attention to. Now, I know I've seen the response from the from the South African Air Force on it. Can I just confirm you're still able to see my slides?
Yes, we are. We are on your slides.
Thank you. So the big problem there comes in, Mr. Chairman. If there is a collision between a military aircraft and a civil aircraft, and there were arms being carried, things like this, this is where the things are going to get very difficult. And I can speak of experience. We have had collisions between military and civilian aircraft. And the big issue is I still believe that matter is not very clear with the written permission. That aspect, I do believe the legal advisors must have a very good look at in that regard. Now, Mr. Chairman, on section 40 is this issue of reporting. I think if we look at the Act right now, it basically says that the report must be submitted to the Minister, Parliament, and public. But the issue is who is responsible to take action? Who is accountable for what happens? What is to correct it? The purpose of an Act investigation is to identify what went wrong so you can fix it, so you can take steps to it. And so it's very, very unclear how that issue comes about. I do believe that ASAP clearly should, as ICAO says, that the investigation authority should not report to the same minister responsible for the regulation or safety oversight of civil aviation. I would rather prefer that to be responsible to the presidency or to another minister. There needs to be check and balances in this aspect. I'll leave it with that for you to consider in that regard. Now, appointment of members of ASAP, and I think that was where some of the big problems in the past came about. The appointment requirements, experience requirements were very strict, and now it is changed, and there is a reference to say that the members must have other relevant expertise or qualifications. Big challenge comes in, how is this to be assessed by whom to decide what is relevant in that respect? So this needs to be given some more attention in that regard. So I believe that needs to be dealt with, as well as how the financial aspects of ASAP is going to be controlled. Should there be involvement of the Minister of Finance in that respect? Because an action investigation can be extremely expensive. I recall that with the World Cup, my advice to the director of civil aviation that time was that if there's an accident and an airplane is in the water at either Cape Town, Durban or Port Elizabeth, I will be coming to him and asking for 2 billion rand to investigate that accident. So this is very expensive aspects, how the financial aspects of ASAP needs to be handled. So we need to take that in mind, please, Mr. Chairman. There's other issues, and all those is because of past experience I had. How is an owner entitled to damages? I believe this is aspects that the state legal advisor should be clear with you. What is the involvement of the Department of Finance in that respect? And then, of course, Mr. Chairman, influences on the Director of Civil Aviation, the head of the CAA. Now, I believe that wording in the clause should be there, attempting to influence the Commissioner. That should be added. I do believe that is relevant to that aspect. Section 99, I have serious concerns on. The expansion of the limitation of liability is really too wide. It really puts the CAA above the rule of law. I think the emphasis here again should remain restricted to that, to the employees of the CAA, because otherwise you have a situation that the CAA is just can do whatever it wants and claim to have done it in good faith, and it's really not. That limitation should only be to the employees. That is that exemption is far too wide. And then monitoring of regulatory compliance, the issue of whether a warrant is applicable or not, that must be clearly defined in the legislation. Other issue is the issue of exemptions, Mr. Chairman. The exemptions is a reality in aviation industry. You cannot at all times on a specific day be in compliance with an aspect. For example, a part may not be available from the manufacturer, and then you have to have an exemption or an extension for the compliance period, taking in mind the risk factors, et cetera, involved with it. And to have this exemption, the minister to make the decisions on exemptions is not practical. His office will be swamped. And it really must remain with the director. It's mainly about the regulations that the exemptions is about. But to take it into the minister's office, we'll end up with a situation similar to what we have with the firearms licensing. It just becomes impossible to handle. So really something that needs to be considered. I would not endorse and recommend for you to endorse that to be dealt with at the minister's level. Authorized officers and persons, Mr. Chairman, again, legal advisors must clearly define what there is, because there's very distinct whether you're dealing with safety aspects and with security aspects. That is in the aircraft operations and where you're dealing with airports. Those things need attention to be given to further. Fine. The other aspect, Mr. Chairman, which I'm serious concern with is the deletion of that paragraph 3, that access to information. Mr. Chairman, documentation is very expensive today. Not everything is online. And there's that emphasis of that there must be an officer designated to keep in his office a copy of the complete aspect. If a document referred to in an act or regulations, it must be accessible in one way. I would call for the retainment of that paragraph 3 in that aspect for it. Mr. Chairman, that is in short what I really wish to submit to you and your committee. The emphasis is we need to have for the next 10 years at least a rational and workable Civil Aviation Act that can ensure that aviation continues to grow. And what we really don't, what we would like to see, if you just look at the slide on the right, we would like to see the planes in the sky over Southern Africa with a similar consistency and density as what you have in the European environment. And it really comes right back to you and your oversight functions to ensure that whatever is submitted is in the interest of South Africa and serves the aviation industry to ensure that we have a growing and effective industry that serves the peoples of South Africa. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much again to you and your committee members and to the secretariat staff for the opportunity to have addressed you on this matter. So I said, I just have a personal interest in this, hence my persistence in making comments to the various committees. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Van Zandt, for the presentation to the committee. I was informed that there is an apology that was raised around the presenter that must go to the doctor at 11. So I just wanted to check whether is it Mr. Raden Hua? Is he the one that was raising an issue of an apology? Can you just confirm that?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. I trust you have a copy of my presentation.
Yeah, just be patient a bit. I just wanted to ascertain that so that I then make a humble appeal to the members to say the engagement that they wanted to raise with regard to the presentation by Mr. Fancy. Can they just pack them so that we allow you to make a presentation so that we do not interfere also with your doctor's appointment. I want to believe that this is a humane platform, so therefore they will have an understanding to allow you to not to miss the doctor's appointment. You are comfortable with that, honorable members? You can proceed, Mr. Werenguo. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Once again, thank you for the opportunity of addressing the NCOP on this particular issue, which lies dear to my heart. I've been involved in aviation for the last 30 years, so I hope I can make a useful contribution to the proposed amendment of the Draft Civil Aviation Amendment Bill. Thank you, sir. I'm ready to start with my slide, then I'll go to slide one, that is the definitions. Okay, can I just see my, yeah. The first one is the word aerodrome. It would seem that the word aerodrome is to replace the word airport in the Act, as appears from certain sections in the draft bill that has been amended. However, the problem is in a number of sections not being amended, the word airport still remains, as appears from inter alia the following sections of the Act, namely, I've given the numbers to you, sections 134, 139, and a number in section 155. The problem is you have to, if you use aerodrome instead of airport, then you have to delete airport in the whole Act as such, unless there's specific reason for keeping airport vis-a-vis aerodrome. I don't think there's such a need, but I think that the committee should just check if to make certain that aerodrome is to be used in the whole Act instead of airport. So I'm just drawing the committee's attention to this particular section as such. The second definition, heliport, as the word heliport is being included in the definition of the word aerodrome in the draft bill, it can be deleted in the Act. However, in section 139 of the Act, the word heliport has not been deleted. What is important, as the word heliport is used in part 139 of civil aviation regulations, in subpart 2, this whole section on heliports as such, the word heliport must remain in part 139 of the regulations. It relates to the requirements and provisions regarding heliports. The definition, therefore, of heliport has to remain in part 1 of the said regulations. Thank you. That's my section 1. That's my first slide. And what's important, as I say, my colleague, Mr. Rini Fasel, has already addressed a number of issues that I've already mentioned in my submission. So I'm not going to labor the point. I just want again to point out that the definition of the expression air service must be looked again. The third one is a very important definition. Definition, executive responsible for the investigation of aircraft accidents and incidents, does not appear in Chapter 4 of the Act. And if you look closely at the Act, the functions of the executive is limited to the appointment and management of investigators. And as I say, that can't be the whole function of the executive manager, because his role cannot be limited to non-operational matters. He should be able to give guidance and give advice to all types of investigations and issues. So I don't think the executive's role must be spelled out exactly in this Act, in the section, in the definition section, what is his functions as such. What is the important thing that bothers me in this regard is, if you look at my last paragraph, last bullet, it has to be noted that the functions and powers of the ASCB as set out in clauses 28 and 29 of the bill basically corresponds to the functions and powers of executive, which has to be rectified. So there has to be a distinction between the powers of the ASAB and of the powers of the executive manager as such. I think that's a very important point, which I implore the committee to have a close look at. Thank you. That's the next one is very important, but also is regards the period of 4 months notice of increase in fees, charges, and levies to be industry appears too long due to a number of factors. The problem is, as to levies, the Minister of Finance is still required to indicate to the Minister of Transport with a specific period of time that proposed increase in levies is acceptable. That also can and usually takes time. The input from the industry can also take time to consider. Should be considered necessary to accept the proposed notice period due to international considerations, the COCA procedure has to be revisited. Because at the moment, as you know, in short, any proposed amendment has to be submitted to PARCOM, which publishes for comment, and then after comments are received, PARCOM has a look at the proposed comments, and refer it back to subcommittee on this particular issue, which takes a lot of time. In this regard, must remember that PARCOM only sits every 2 months. So if there's a slight hitch in the process of dealing with comments on fees, it's going to increase the time limits in which the amendment has to be finalized. As I say, the COCOM procedure is of a time-consuming limit nature and requires a lot of steps. I've worked out when a proposal is sent to COCOM to be published, commented on, reviewed, and decided on by the COCOM members, it usually takes a minimum of 6 months. So I really think this period of 4 months thereafter, after promulgation of the said fees, is too long. I think a period of a month or even 2 months is more practical as such. Thank you. This one also my colleague, Mr. Fassel, has dealt with more extensively. Just the fact that the commissioner must also be in a position to prevent an attempt on him or her to unduly influence him. I think this is an important provision, and I think it should be included in this particular clause 14 of the section 76, in order to protect the director from undue influence. Thank you. That is clause 14. Next one, this is a very important one, clause 48, exemptions. My colleague from Salas really touched on this issue. The important point is that the amendment proposing that exemptions from consideration regulations only granted by the Minister of Transport will cause the necessary administrative holdups and delays to the detriment of the client. The administrative process currently in place pertaining to exemptions involves input of the technical divisions of the CAA and the legal division of the CAA, which have to consult on a regular basis. Any recommendation by the technical or legal divisions has to follow the administrative chain of command, which takes time. That means it's going to go from the person dealing with the issue to the manager, to the senior manager, to the general manager, and then to the director. An important problem is at this stage, the technical expertise to deal with exemptions is situated within the CAA. Unfortunately, the DOT is only of an administrative process and can only do administrative aspects and is not in a position to deal with technical issues. They will have to revert it back to the CAA's relevant technical departments as such. Further issue is, last bullet, as a technical and legal division of CAA are located on the same premises, it's easy for the director, commissioner, to have meetings to clarify issues that have arisen before decision is taken. It's easy for the director to have a meeting to clarify certain issues before making a decision. The problem is the Office of Minister is situated in Pretoria, so it takes at least 50 kilometers away. It's going to delay any proposed exemption if there's a number of discussions between this face-to-face discussions between the CA and the Minister of Transport. So I think it's for practical purposes, it is better to keep the exemption process with the CA as such. Thank you. Thank you also again. This issue is also relevant. It deals with the distinction between the functions of the authorized officers and authorized persons. Now, authorized officers are persons involved in safety issues, while authorized persons are involved in security issues. Statutory security-related powers are vested in the members of the SAPS and SNNDF appointed as authorized persons by the director/commissioner. Powers of search, seizure, and arrest, which are included in the said clauses, are part of the statutory powers conferred on members of the SAPS and SANDF. Powers, functions, and duties of authorized officers and inspectors in terms of the Act are all safety-related and do not include drastic powers like seizure and arrest. Our conclusion is the blurring of the distinction between these two sets are not justified, and the powers of authorized officers and inspectors should be limited to safety, and those of security and of authorized persons to security. Thank you, Mr. Chair, on this point. I'm free. Mention has been made that for the establishment of a fees committee to deal with fees that has been proposed proposed as an increase. The problem is a fees committee, as envisaged in the said clause, is already in existence as a subcommittee of CARCOM as per section 159 of the Act and subpart 2 of part 11 of the regulations. It also consists members of the aviation industry. The inclusion of such a specific fees committee will only lead to duplication of an already existing function. Thank you, sir. Last one, that's also an issue that my colleague Mr. Fassel has dealt with. Deletion is not justified for the following reasons. Introduction of the International Aviation Standard does not require a physical insertion of the app. Section. The content of the appropriate CATS document cannot be set out in the applicable CATS document. It's only included by reference. And for this reason, existing subsection 2 of the Act has to remain, as it indicates the process for the issuing of the International Aviation Standard. So the standard cannot be just does not require an physical inclusion into the CATS document, so it can only be included by reference. And for this reason, it's submitted that the existing part section 163 should be retained as is. Thank you. That's the second last. There's one left. Thank you, sir. There's one more. Thank you for the opportunity to make a presentation to the committee. To say I've been involved in aviation for a long time. I really hope that this might be of importance to the committee that necessitates some amendments to the proposed draft amendment bill. Once again, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for having me. Thank you for the assistance with the technical staff to enable me to provide you with a slide, with a PowerPoint presentation. Thanks again, once again, and good luck with your with the meeting. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Arangua, on behalf of the committee. It is my pleasure to receive your presentation. We will then invite Mr. Keith Story on behalf of the Commercial Aviation Association of Southern Africa to also proceed with this presentation. Over to you, Mr. Story. I see Mr. Story has left us again. Has left us. Is it an issue of connection? Let's just give me an opportunity to come back. Can you deal with that, Sibela? You are muted. Just as he was about to take the platform, Mr. Suri left the platform. I suspect he got disconnected. Are we succeeding, sir, Bella?
Chairperson?
Are we succeeding to get Mr. Story?
No, and also his phone now is not going through.
His phone is not going through?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
Let us probably then... probably invite the Department of Transport, but on the proviso that when Mr. Suri comes back, he will then give we will then give him an opportunity to present on behalf of CASA. Who's presenting on behalf of Transport?
Good afternoon, Chair. Morning, Chair. My name is Elizabeth Nche, and I will be presenting on behalf of the department, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Nche. The floor is yours. We were supposed to receive Mr. Story just as he was about to take the podium. He got disconnected, so we then said, let us take the Department of Transport to respond, but at the same time, with the proviso that when Mr. Story comes back, we will then give him that opportunity so that in your response, you are able then to engage with all the three presentations. Over to you. You are muted, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and once again, good morning to you, morning to the members of the committee and all protocol observed. I'm quickly trying to share my presentation.
Our apology, I suspect you were still preparing yourself to be the next one to present.
Correct, Chair. Can I get confirmation on whether members, Chair, can see the presentation.
Yes, yes, you can see it. You can proceed.
And I'll take your guidance here, Chair. So I'm going to skip the responses that we prepared for CASA, and I'll start with responding to the presentations that were done by both Mr. Rennie van Zyl and Mr. Herman Veldenburg.
Yes, yes, yes.
Then, okay, then if that's the understanding, my presentation will start from slide number 5.
Yes, you can proceed.
Okay, thank you, Chair. So with respect to the submission that was made by Mr. Rennie van Zyl with respect to changing the name from director to the commissioner. Here, our response is that this is just the name. This is just the name that is being changed from director to commissioner of civil aviation. And the change is meant to address the confusion that currently exists with the title of director. And normally we all know that in government structures, a director is referred to as the first level of SMS in the government department. So we are actually trying to address that confusion here. And the powers, functions, and responsibilities will remain unchanged. And we are also stressing that the change will also not have any effect on any of the decisions that have been taken by the director or any decisions that are about to be made by the director. And it also has no bearing on the validity of any of the documents, be it the licenses, the certificates, permission, or any authorization or no approval. So therefore, there will be no financial bearing associated with the change of name. And further, the change of name, we are here also stressing that the name Commissioner of Civil Aviation is actually the title that was used before the Act was amended in 2009, and it will not disadvantage the incumbent to the position any better than when the title was that of a director. So then I'm moving to the next submission that was actually made, and the next submission is with regard to the disagreement with respect to what we articulated relating to the establishment of the Aviation Safety Investigation Board that we normally call ASIB. And here our response is that with regard to the establishment of ASIB, our initial position and the most ideal position would have been to create a complete agency. And as you may be aware, Chair, this is what we actually provided for in the current act that we are trying to amend now with this process. But however, most of the provisions in the current chapter could not be proclaimed as it could not be operationalized. So the situation proposed by this bill is the most ideal position, taking into consideration our circumstances as the country. And the government has actually now made a policy, and in terms of the government policy, no further agencies should be established, and National Treasury had indicated that it will not allocate funds
to
establish ASIF as an
agency.
My apology,
Mr. Herman,
you are disrupting our meeting now. Thank you. My apology, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair. And as I was, as I've just indicated, that it's a government policy that no further agencies will be established. And this was further affirmed by the National Treasury stance that they will actually not allocate any funding for the establishment of ASIF as an agency. And therefore, what we have now articulated in the bill in terms of establishing ASIF, we are actually trying to come up with an alternative way, considering the current circumstances in the country with respect to coming up with in ASIF structure. And this position has been discussed with ICAO, and to a certain extent, the organization is satisfied with this arrangement. So then moving to the next submission that was done. Okay, the next submission was done relates to the proposal that we must use similar wording as the ones that are used in section 71 that actually relates to the establishment of the Civil Aviation Authority. And there's further articulation there to the jurisdiction person. And our response to the submission is that based on the explanation that I've just provided with regard to the government policy stance relating to the establishment of agencies, a similar wording can therefore not be applied in this case, because ASIF will not be a standalone agency and it will therefore not have any human resource capabilities that are similar to our CAA. Then moving on to the next submission, where they were actually saying that it is not clear on how the bill will deal with the transportation of armed Air Force and SAPS aircraft. And we are actually here saying that this is actually catered for in the bill and with respect to exemptions that are applicable in the Act with respect to transportation on behalf of states. And the exemptions are clearly articulated in the bill with respect to the Armament Corporation of South Africa Limited Act and the Defence Act. And in addition, should a need arise or should a need be established for further exemption with respect to transportation of armed equipment, the minister will continue to consult with the relevant ministers to provide any further exemptions if the feeling is that what is actually contained in the applicable section in the bill is actually not sufficient for the purposes of transporting arms. Then I'm now moving to the submission that was actually made. I'll continue with the submission made by Mr. René van Zyl, and from here on, the submission made was also supported by Mr. Herman Veldenboom in his presentation, Chair. And the first one relates to, did I skip? No, apologies, sir. And the first one relates to the where they are actually indicating that there's a confusion with the way we are using the definitions with respect to aerodrome, airport, and heliport. And our response is that the definition of aerodrome as defined, the definition of aerodrome is actually defined in Annex 14 to the Chicago Convention, and within the South Africa context, an aerodrome includes an airport, and this is for airplanes and heliports and helicopters. And that is to ensure that the provisions that only applies to heliports are clear and distinct to those that apply for airports. And for provision that apply to both, the word aerodrome is used. And this principle also applies in the case. This principle also applies in the civil aviation regulations and technical standards that are actually governed by the South African Civil Aviation Authority. And my explanation then just covered this slide right and up to slide number 12. And the next intervention that we are responding to relates to the definition of air service. And the submission that has just been made to the committee now is that the definition that is included in the current bill is actually in conflict with the definition that is being used in both the convention and the Air Services Licensing Act. And our response to that is that the definition is not in conflict with those that are contained both in the Chicago Convention and the Licensing Act. And what we have provided here is a broad definition than the two definitions that are provided in the Convention and the Licensing Act. And this definition includes any services operated by aircraft irrespective of whether such services are operated for reward or on a schedule basis, because the definition that the air service currently in both Chicago Convention and the Air Services Bill, the focus more is on services operated for reward. And we are saying that we are actually stating as a fact that regulating safety and security should not be limited to those services operated for reward, because it also incorporates services that are actually operated by those who have been awarded licenses and they are actually using those licenses for personal use. And should anything happen, safety and security should also apply to those licensees that are actually not operating for reward. So just to stress this issue, we are therefore saying safety and security regulation is required irrespective of the regularity of the service and the commercial aspect thereof. And then moving to the next one with respect to the new definition provided of the executive responsible for aircraft accident and incident investigation. And the question here is whether it will cause any conflict of interest. And as I have already explained, Chair, why we could not actually operationalize the current Chapter 4 based on the stance and the government policy with respect to establishing assets. So we are then saying that the position that is actually being proposed in the bill is the most ideal position considering the circumstances that are articulated. And as I've also articulated earlier, that we have engaged ICAO on this issue and to a certain extent, and the organization is satisfied with the arrangement. And with ASIF being in place, they will easily deal with situations similar to the calibration aircraft owned by the CAA, and therefore this executive will therefore be responsible for managing the aircraft investigators, and those investigators will be designated by ASIF to investigate specific accidents should we have some. So it is therefore critical that we establish a framework, and we set this framework in advance so as not to hamper the work of ASIF. And we are further articulating there, and basically here we are further stressing the point that I've just alluded to, that ASIF will not have any HR functions nor administrative structure to perform administrative functions. So the current constraints compelled us to adopt this process. Then I'm moving to the next intervention that was made with respect to section 28.1. And here, in the intervention that was made, there was mentioned that there's an ICAO recommendation, and they said Mr. Van Zyl further articulated what that specific ICAO regulation says. And in our response, we are actually saying that ICAO issues both recommended practices and standards. And we are saying that ICAO has minimum standards, and those standards member states are actually required and obliged to meet. And should we fail to meet those minimum standards, then we will end up having significant safety concerns, and those significant safety concerns will actually be registered by ICAO against a state. And we are further articulating here that minimum standards, with respect to minimum standards, ICAO has recommended practices, and these are the practices which are recommended. So there's a difference between minimum standards, because minimum standards, you are bound as a member state to ICAO, you are bound and forced to comply to those standards. But the same principle does not apply when it comes to recommended practices, because those are just recommendations that states should actually comply with. And basically, recommendations are issued because ICAO fully understands that not all member states will be able to implement the recommended practices. And this is precisely the reason why they were not elevated to as the level of standards. So there is no way that the KO can actually penalize us simply because the accident investigation authority is reporting to the same minister. And under our current circumstances, we have received a very high score, even on accident and incident investigation. So the passing of this bill, therefore, will enhance our overall achievement. And further aspects of independence will be explored when our circumstances have changed. Then moving to the next interventions that were made around section 16 with relate to relevant expertise and qualification. We are responding there saying that the commissioner and the expert appointed by the minister will be capable to do the necessary assessment. And with respect to intervention made on section 30, we are actually saying that ASIP will be paid out money appropriated by parliament and levies imposed on charges for services rendered. And with respect to the intervention made on section 34, relating to search and seizure by appointed investigators, our response there is that the bill was certified as consistent with the Constitution, and this was actually done by the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. And with respect to the question posed on Section 34, our response is that the content of the certificate will be prescribed by the regulation. Then moving on to the other interventions made with respect to with respect to section 36, we are saying here that if the owner wants to claim for damages, he or she can do it under the law of delict. So liability does not have to be established in this act, as we have already such a framework in existence. And with respect to section 41 that relates to aircraft accident and incident report, our response there is that this is an operational issue that is already covered in the regulation, and it will be maintained in the regulation. So moving to the next intervention, and the intervention made relate to section 16 relating to the rules, and this is around that the view that ASIP will be a monopoly with no free market access for checks and balances, and we are maintaining that it will not be a monopoly. ASIP is not providing any service for reward, so that by itself cannot actually make it a monopoly. ASIP will be discharging a state function, and there are treasury regulations, Chair, that will apply to all financial matters that will involve ASIP, and the rules will give guidance to ensure that actions of ASIP comply and can be measured against those predetermined requirements. Then moving to next intervention, and this relates to section 71 of the Principal Act and 74. The submission actually made reference to section 71 of the Principal Act, and this is with respect to the period of notice. And our submission is that, Chair, that actually this specific clause relates to section 14, not section 71. And our submission, therefore, is that the 4-month period has been agreed upon with the industry. And this is the period they require to adjust their system to further any changes with respect to the fees. And the next intervention that was made is around Section 76 of the Principal Act. And here our response, Chair, is that the prohibition of any action includes any attempt to perform that act. Therefore, the proposed addition will not add any value, and as a result, we are actually not supporting the proposed addition to the text. Okay. So moving to the next comment made, the comment made is around section 99, which relates to the limitation of liability. And our response here is that CAA designate persons who are actually not its employees, and the persons exercising the powers conferred to them by this act also need to be protected in the similar vein with CAA employees. And the next intervention that was made relates to section 113, and we are actually seeking more clarity with respect to the intervention made, because we could not actually understand what the comment related to. And today in the presentation, we were kind of hoping that we'll be able to pick up what the written comment was all about when Mr. Van Zyl presented, but unfortunately we could still not pick it up. So if it can please be clarified so that we can respond to it accordingly. And the next intervention that was made relates to section 130. This is with respect to the exemptions, and the intervention that was made was that the intervention, the exemptions in the bill are not practical. And our response, therefore, Chair, is that granting of exemptions entails exempting a person from complying with the provisions of the regulation. And this is the power to make regulations is actually conferred upon the minister, and hence the power to exempt anyone from complying with any specific section of the regulation to therefore be conferred to the minister. And further, we are actually submitting, Chair, that if there are many requests for exemptions that are given, that will entail, that will be entailed in the regulation concern will actually need to be, okay, that will entail that the regulation concern will therefore need to be changed. Okay, the next submission related to a number of sections, that is section 140, 145, 146, 147, and 146. And the submission made was that we need to have a clear separation in authorization with respect to safety and security purposes. And our response to that, Chair, is that the authorization takes place on a case-by-case basis. And what is actually contained in the Act are provisions that deal comprehensively with such authorizations. And in practice, the authorizations are different, obviously, depending on what one is authorized to do. We are therefore submitting, Chair, that there is a clear separation for authorization for safety and security. The next submission made, Chair, relates to Section 155, and that's related to the fees that are actually channeled to the CAA. And the submission made was that if we then establish a fee committee, there will be a duplication of responsibility. So our submission here is that CAA administers a number of fees, checks, and some of the fees of CAA are not channeled through CARCOM. And the establishment of the fee committee will ensure that the industry participate in the discussion regarding any fees that are to be charged by CAA. And when we refer to some of the fees that are not channeled through CARCOM, we are actually referring to the fees that are actually supposed to be levied in terms of the Fuel Levy Act. So that is our submission, Chair.
No, you can proceed, Madam Chair. I thought you were pausing.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Chair. The next submission related to deleting Section 163, subsection 3. And the submission provided reasons why the particular section should be deleted. And our response to that is that the deleted section required an official, my apologies, Chair. We are proposing the deletion of Section 163. And the submission that was made is that it is actually not justifiable for us to delete this particular section. And the reasons were provided as to why it is not justifiable. And we are actually saying that if we look at the particular section in question, it actually requires an official from the department to make copies of the annexes that are issued by a KO and make them freely available to anyone who is actually requesting such copies. And we are actually saying, submitting, Chair, responding, Chair, to the intervention made, and we are actually saying that we are deleting this because this contravenes the copyright of a KO. ECAO annexes are available on the ECAO website and they are for sale, and whoever needs to use those annexes can actually purchase them through ECAO, and us making copies of the annexes that are being made available for a fee by ECAO amounts to contravening the copyright. Okay. Moving to, I'm almost at the end of the presentation, Chair. So moving to the submission, okay, I think I need to pause here, Chairperson, because I was addressing the submissions that were made by Mr. Van Zyl and Mr. Veldenboer. So if you allow me, Chair, I will pause here for now.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for that. Again, it looks like Mr. Story is back now with us. We also on the chat that he got disconnected. Let's probably then allow you to pause and then invite Mr. Story to then make his presentation, and then thereafter we will then also give you an opportunity to then respond to the issues that you raised. I think in terms of the presentation from Mr. Story, it will be on behalf of Commercial Aviation Association of Southern Africa. Are you on the floor, Mr. Story?
I am. Please confirm with me regularly, because I fervently gave my address and was speaking to myself. So I'll check with you after every point that I am still audible and you can hear me. My apologies for whatever we brought.
Yes, indeed. We even tried to contact you on your phone.
I turned it off. I turned it off to make sure that you were interrupted in the meeting. Right. Thank you very much for affording me this opportunity again. Good day, Mr. Chairman, and good day, honorable members of the Select Committee. I just want to put in perspective who CASA is so that you've got an understanding of where we come from. Firstly, we have been in existence since 1944, and we represent general aviation. What that is all the domestic and independent airports, maintenance organizations. So all the organizations that repair and keep the aircraft in South Africa, as well as airlines in the air. All the training schools and all the non-scheduled operators. These are the charter companies. And that's inclusive of cargo. And finally, 4IR drones. So RPAS is what we call them. We look after that. Okay. So since our last meeting with the Portfolio Committee, we've seen that there's been some changes. And our organization in two terms represents roughly 40% of the aviation industry. So what I'm going to raise is a practical element of what is going to be affected. I concur with the points of the initial presenters, and I have listened to the last part of the last presenter. Just one statement I wish to make is that ICAO manages the international standards, and South Africa has both an international adherence that they must do, as well as a domestic. And those two elements need to be understood quite clearly in this bill that is going to cover both of those sectors. My first point is, again, the air service, the definition of it as proposed. We find problem with that. Internationally, or
my apologies, Mr. Story, can you fly to a presentation?
Can I what?
Fly to a presentation.
I am verbally presenting. I am not flighting any presentation.
Okay, no, that is fine. Let's proceed then.
Excellent. So the definition of the air service is it was designed under the to align with the Article 96 of the Chicago Convention. And also it is covered in the Air Service Licensing Act. You must be aware, and the legal advisors must be aware, that we are currently redeveloping and aligning and integrating both the international and the domestic air service license. And the definition wherein that is carried should be aligned with this document, and we do not believe it is. The poignant deletion of scheduled and means that you are now going to include all training, all of the other things that are not air services. And we do not believe that's the intention, and it will bring significant cost and needless oversight that is already covered under the regulator. So if that can be looked at, we believe in this current dispensation with the economic catch-up and the future development and the growth, that further bureaucratic red tape that you will introduce by making training and all those other elements now require an Air Service Act is not in the best interest of the country. So therefore, we do not believe that there should be an expansion of the meaning of air service, and it differs from the international level. Am I still audible?
Very, very so.
Fantastic. My second point is the change of director to commissioner. The DOT, as conferred by my previous colleagues, just want to create an administrative change. However, that administrative change equates into significant cost to the industry. It's similar to the changing of street names, which had a political reason and has some value. This that they wish to introduce has no value. Every single organization in practical terms is going to have to change every document that they have, every manual, every page. The inspectors from the regulator have going to have to reread every single one of those documents to check the change. That equates into millions of rand, not just thousands of rand, by this one decision to change, and there is no value to it. Also, internationally, the use of director, et cetera, is commonplace. We are now going away from the international best practice, in our opinion. And this will further create costs to an industry which has been hard hit. I would like to put on the table that over 380 operators are no longer operating since the advent of COVID. And to do this to the industry is not going to make any sense whatsoever. All right, my third point, if I am still audible. Clause 48, the amendment of Section 130, which is the technical standards and the, this is a duplication where we're going to go to the minister to give, to be able to empower exemptions, etc. In practical terms, first of all, the DOT does not have that expertise. So either they're going to develop their own department or they're going to have to develop some sort of efficient interaction with the regulator that has those skills. Judging by the slowness of the interactions with the Air Service Licensing Council, which is currently not functioning, and also in the inability of the operator or of the regulator currently to deliver on its very own service standards. This is just adding an extra level of bureaucracy, and we cannot see in practical terms how that is. If the DOT is going to be able to show us how they're going to efficiently do this, possibly. However, at the present moment, due to these inefficiencies, we are already seeing a significant exodus of aircraft, the large revenue-generating aircraft, to neighboring countries and other countries. And putting in this extra bureaucracy, I don't see how it's going to work. And furthermore, the appeal process, when the director or even the minister puts in a regulation, and it's not an administrative side, there are practical needs to change regulations on the go. Having a long time to have that happen equates to these aircraft standing on the ground or these operations not working, which actually turns into lots of money. The appeals process, which is an appeals committee, that is also in abeyance, which is also run by the DOT, which is not functioning at the present moment. So this act is going to empower two sections that are, in our humble opinion, not effectively operating and create a longer period for this to work. So that's on those. Clause four, I've got two other clauses that we're going to deal with, or my part four, which is clauses 52 to 59 and 140 to 148. It's the extension of the powers of the authorities. We believe an extension is not warranted. We have experts in SAPS. We have experts in the SADF. We have experts in SARS. We should be seeing combined missions where the limited authorities of the civil aviation inspectors utilize with a joint agreement those different departments. We do not believe the expansion of those powers is suitable for the industry, and it also lends to irrelevant groundings, irrelevant things that could be happening with those extension of powers issued to those inspectors. So we believe that needs to be looked at very clearly. Second to last, the strikings of sections 156 to 162 and the amendment of 163 will undermine the very independence of the work and the robust, well-developed systems to debate and create regulations which we send to the minister or we promote to the minister. If you are going to move it to where it is that it falls underneath the commissioner, nay, the director of civil aviation, you're going to bring in undue bias, which we have seen already, and that is not going to be a correct way to move forward. That undue bias where the director is now creating the regulations through to or guiding through to the minister is not a fair reflection of what has happened there. We have seen this time and time again, and you can go and look at the current CARCOM process where that has been attempted. If you look at the submissions made by the Civil Aviation Authority that the industry absolutely goes against and we end up with a better regulation, I believe the bias created by this regulation is not going to be in the best interest of South Africa. And finally, my point six, which is two elements here. The words that have been put in here, which is unreasonable and unacceptable to us, shall endeavor to consult with relevant stakeholders. to determine charges and fees is most disturbing. Shall endeavor doesn't mean that you are going to consult, which is a necessity in a democracy, which we attempt to uphold in South Africa. We do not believe that the CAA can exercise these powers under this. This is impractical and we believe almost draconian. And we put forward that we do not believe that this will pass constitutional muster if you endeavor to consult. CASA also seems to have been omitted from the list of consultative bodies. We see by name the Association of Airlines in South Africa, which is just a small segment of the aviation industry in South Africa. We see AXA, which is only the state-run airports. However, CASA, which represents the independent airports, all the other functionings of there is omitted as one of the official bodies to be consulted with, and that we find irregular. Finally, in my end-off, many of the other African states have failed to protect their general aviation industry and their recreational industry, which this act in certain areas is running roughshod over because they are adding ICAO to something that should be domestically developed. And we have seen a significant decline in those aviation activities that are feeders and the growth areas in aviation. And that is one of the fundamental reasons why we are not seeing the growth. Please note again, the employment growth to about 50% of the youth that is coming into the market. We need to grow this industry, and this act in certain areas is going to inhibit that act in practical terms. We trust you will look at these additional comments that are in our PDF. So we put a letter in and a PDF of the bill with other points that are noted in that bill, which give other information. We trust that you will look at those in your further deliberations, and we trust that what comes out of those deliberations will not have the negative effects that we believe currently you are about to introduce. Thank you for hearing me. My apologies for not presenting at my time due to the technical glitch, and we hope that we will see this accommodated in the final document. Thank you, the honourable members of this committee. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I close. Thank you, Mr. Sori, for the presentation. Let us also agree that your disconnection had an impact in terms of our rundown of our agenda, but that is it may, you are happy that we were able to come back to make a case for your institution. Let us again go back to Ms. Chair, just to have a feedback in terms of those key silent features raised by Mr. Story. Ms. Chair, floor is yours.
Thank you, Chair.
Yes, you are.
I'm trying to fly the presentation quickly.
Okay.
Can I then get confirmation that we can all see the presentation that is being flighted?
Yes, indeed.
Thank you, Chair. So with regards to the submissions made by CASA, the first one that he made with respect to the definition of the air services, the definition of the air service, I think I've already alluded to that, but I do understand that he had connection problems. So for his benefit, I can if you allow me, Chair, I can repeat what I submitted to the committee with respect to that particular definition.
Yes, and
in a nutshell, quickly, what we basically said was that the current definition that is included in the bill it's not in conflict with any definition that is there. And I had Casa referring to the Licensing Act, and we are saying it's not in conflict. What we are aiming to achieve there is to have a broad definition, and mainly because regulating safety and security should not be limited to certain services. So that's basically the reason why we are then broadening that scope in the definition. And the next intervention that was made relates to the proposal to remove sections 156, 157, 158, 159, 160, 161, and 162, and further amendment of 163. And here, Chair, what we are saying is that as a principle, just as a principle, the Act, coming up with the Act prescribes what needs to be done, while the regulation outlines how it needs to be done. And that's a principle when we come to developing acts and regulations. So here then what we are submitting to the committee is that these issues were actually tabled at CARCOM. CARCOM is the Civil Aviation Regulation Committee, and CAS is an active member of that structure. And our submission is that this issue was tabled at CARCOM, and it was thoroughly discussed at CARCOM, and an agreement was reached anonymously, so with the explanations that were given why these particular sections are actually moved from the Act and to be incorporated almost verbatim into the regulations. And we are saying that these sections are better provided for in the regulations. And the responsibility to make the regulation is actually entrusted to the minister, and CARCOM is an advisory body that actually advises minister and CAA on the regulations that needs to be developed and brought to the minister's attention for consideration and approval. So it is therefore not clear how the independence of CARCOM will actually be undermined by just moving the provisions of the Act into the regulation, Chair. And we are actually, there's a pronouncement, so we are not agreeing that the existence, the independence of CARCOM will actually be undermined, because in the Act, there's a pronouncement that it's actually being made on CARCOM, and there's a part on how these particular sections will actually be moved into the regulation, Chair. And the other submission that was made is with respect, and this is mainly on the written submission that was submitted by CASA. They raised a question on the definition that we have that is as prescribed, and they're actually saying there that it is actually strange that CARCOM is actually not mentioned at all. And we are saying as prescribed means as prescribed by the regulation, and this is captured in Section 1 of the Principal Act, Chair. And we are further submitting that this is just indicating that actually the correct reference here is Section 73E and H, and it deals with the functions of CAA, and CARCOM is a consultative structure, which is actually involved in assisting the CAA with actually discharging its functions. And the detailed explanation on how consultation is done through CARCOM will be contained in the regulations, Chair. The next submissions that were made relate to their question in Section 72 in terms of adding paragraph G. And we are actually saying that here that it is government prerogative through coming up with legislation on giving some responsibilities to the CAA. And we are actually citing an example here. We are saying that the Environmental Management Act may impose responsibilities on SACAR on regulation of environmental aspects of the civil aviation, and further on number of labor legislation imposed, and also on a number of legislation which will impose a duty on CAA to perform certain functions. And with regard to the submission made with respect to deleting the word civil aviation, our submission, Chair, is that we are envisaging that other legislation will give responsibilities to CAA, and such responsibilities will normally be accompanied by user charges or any other form of compensation. And this is not only limited to the civil aviation legislation, Chair. And with respect to submission made on Section 99 that actually deals with the limitation of liabilities, our submission is that limiting personal liabilities of administrative decision made in good faith is not unconstitutional, Chair. And we are further submitting that this was subjected to the state law advisors, and the state law advisors did not find it to be unconstitutional. Another submission made, Chair, relates to the omission of CASA on the list of consultative bodies. And here, Chair, we are saying that we don't have a list of consultative bodies. What normally happens is we consult different stakeholders depending on the relevancy of the issues that are being discussed at that particular stage. And if CASA, we heard Mr. Kev's story indicating now that they are never consulted, and he's correct, they are very key and critical to civil aviation. And we are further here submitting, Chair, that if CASA has issues with the fact that they are never consulted whenever the department engage on civil aviation related issues, the organization should actually engage the department in that regard to sort it out, because clearly this is outside this process. And I think this is my last response to the intervention made. I do submit, Chair. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the comprehensive response to the issues as raised by all our three presenters. The response to a larger degree put us in a much more better position to locate the thrust of issues raised by our different stakeholders who indeed responded to our staff call when we invited them to comment on the Civil Aviation Amendment Bill. And we will now take this opportunity just to get a sense from the parliamentary legal advisor, Mr. Frank Jenkins, as well as any issues that you want to advise with us in response to the structure of the presentations. Over to you, Mr. Jenkins.
Sorry, Chairperson, I just dropped my pen. Thank you very much, and good morning to all the members and the members of the public who made submissions. Chair, I hope I'm audible. I've made notes throughout the meeting, and I've also brought my historical engagement with from the National Assembly Portfolio Committee with me this morning. Chair, the policy issues about, in simple terms, who must do what and how do we decide which functions belongs where or what name to call this person or that is, those are policy issues which the department has responded to. So I will keep myself with the provisions that I think we need to say something about. And I think the most important, Chair, is the search and seizure provision. Now, the search and seizure provision, we have in Parliament considered this a few times, most notably when the Financial Intelligence Services Act was, a bill was referred back in 2016. So we had a senior counsel opinion on what is search and seizure, also of a licensed premise, and there is provision, a constitutional allowable provision there that says that we can do a search and seizure under certain circumstances without a warrant if it's a licensed premise, even if it's an unlicensed premise. If you get permission, you can, or if it's if you can satisfy certain requirements. So, Chairperson, on that matter, I can look at the detail of the provision in the bill and come back to the committee on search and seizure. Chairperson, the other thing that's important for our office in Parliament, the Legal Service Office in Parliament, is consistency issues. We look at quality of legislation, and there were submissions this morning about inconsistencies, inconsistent use of airport and aerodrome, and we will look at that. That's also an editing issue of getting the quality of the book correct. Chairperson, the issue of conflict of interest, that's my last point I wanted to make, with the Civil Aviation Authority then also appointing the Director of Investigation and saying that there might be a conflict of interest. Chair, we can look at that, but I think the department responded to that, saying that, that it is in the nature of the entity being established, not established, but the entity, the Civil Aviation Authority, as well as assets. How it is established and why the CIA will, of course, do the appointment of the investigation. So I don't think that's a critical issue, but we will look at that, Chair. So those are the three issues I wanted to highlight. The search and seizure, which I'll come back to the committee. Consistency issues, which is very important so that we have properly written law. And then the issue of rationality with the appointment of the Director of Investigations, although I'm not too concerned from where I'm standing, Chair, this, because you can't, I'm going to just put it like this, one cannot assume that there will be a conflict of interest. Conflict of interest has a certain definition. You can also not assume that there will be partial or interference just because the legislation creates certain responsibilities for the CIA. CIA. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Jenkins. Can we then get a view from the State Law Advisor? Do we have the...
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. My name is Dr. Harichandran from the State Law Advisor's office. Chairperson, we have the view that the department has comprehensively covered the matters raised, and they've addressed the matters raised in the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Archeron. Let's then open the floor for clarity seeking engagement from the honorable members, take into account that we will indeed have an opportunity in our next sitting to deliberate on the report and get the thrust in terms of what are the key salient features that we need to take to the House once there is a convergence of views in terms of different provinces, because this is Section 75, so it means it has to get the necessary support of provinces. I have noted Honorable Tim Rochester. Let's start with you, Tim.
Chair, thank you very much. Yes, I just wanted to confirm that obviously there's still time for deliberation on this matter. And as you said, it still has to go to provinces. But Chair, I just would like to thank all the industry experts and representatives who've joined us this morning. I think often, you know, I'm certainly not an aviation expert, and it's good to hear from all parties involved so that we can educate ourselves better. And their input certainly will help us charting the right way forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Tim, for that. Let's get a sense from whether there are any further deliberations that honourable members would want to engage with in terms of classifying question. It looks like the members are happy with the okay. Honorable Khai.
Thank you very much. I concur with the honorable professor that the position, the input from the public is clear, and also the responses from the department are clear, and also support Advocate Jenkins on the issue that is raised, that he will be giving us a feedback on. But I just want clarity, because there's a point that Honorable Protestant raised the issue, the role of provinces. My understanding is that this is Section 75 bill, so it's not going to go to the provinces. I just need clarity on that. I was trying to check the bill, but I didn't have the time before you allow me to speak. I'm still going to do that, Chair. But if anyone can quickly indicate whether it is a Section 75 or Section 76 bill. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Khai. The bill is a Section 75 bill, so it is not a Section 76 bill. I suspect the point that Tim was raising was that obviously as members of the committee, we must still have an opportunity to deliberate on the feedback from the public. But more than that, I think there are key areas that were identified by Mr. Jenkins in terms of further conversing, and he will come back to us. But you are correct, it is a Section 75 bill. I thought that was the understanding that team had. But more than that, I get a sense that it was more about that when we take a decision on this matter, there has to be a quorum of the meeting. That was my understanding in terms of what Tim said. Is that what the understanding, Tim?
Yes, Chair, absolutely. Thank you for summarising that.
Then, honourable members, indeed, quite an exciting and technical field that we were subjected to as members. The work around the civil aviation, which is quite technical by virtue of the fact that it is a legislation amendment, and there are a number of areas, there are a number of stakeholders, there are a number of parties that have, by virtue of the work that they do, have expressed quite an informative issues ranging from right at the beginning. The definition that they isolated, but more than that, areas that they are of the view that do not belong to the Act, but to other areas. But other than that, I think what is quite important is how the department has responded to that. There are areas, whether it is a heliport, whether it is an airdrome, whether it is an air service, those definitions, the angle from which various participants has raised, and how the department also responds is an eye to all of us in the sense that it then put us in a much more better position as members of the committee when we deliberate. We are able to zoom into those areas, whether it is around limitation of liability, whether it is around the consultative bodies. But I think what is quite important is the need to ensure that as we amend our legislation, what is quite critical is to ensure that all of us are on board. But I think let's agree that the role that the department, the role that the ministry is also taking in terms of this legislation is quite important. I think we'll all remember that 4 years back, there are instances where the former minister of Home Affairs, with regard to the same issues that we canvassed today, ultimately had to face consequences. I think those that will still remember. I think it was, they call it the fire blade saga. What is quite important is that it clearly illustrates the role that as Parliament must play, but more than that, in exercising of oversight. But at the same time also, there's a lot that is expected by cabinet, and in this instance, the Minister of Transport and the department, to make sure that the areas that are identified for amendment in the legislation, they also take into account the history, where we come from. Therefore, it becomes important that we are able to finally ensure that as we move forward, these views are thoroughly canvassed, and it will inform the committee that the decision and the recommendation that the committee will take to the House, so that when the House finally make a pronouncement in terms of the Civil Aviation Amendment Bill, it has the benefit of all these views. So having said that, let me then take this opportunity to indeed express my gratitude on behalf of the Select Committee to all the participants that took part in this today's program. It was, like I indicated, very, 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 uh, educative, because what is quite critical is the need to ensure that all of us are on board. I see that there is a hand raised by Aviation Zoom. Is this an old hand or what, if I may ask?
My apologies, Chair. It's Elizabeth Nche, and I really do apologize. Okay. I forgot to mention that we received a written submission from the Department of Defense, and I see that they are not here to present their written submission. So if you allow me, Chair, I will then submit the written submission and our response thereto to the state law advisor. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Let me just get a sense from the committee secretariat whether did we not receive those inputs. Committee secretary.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, we did receive the inputs sent to the department, but the Department of Defense, they never indicated whether they will do the oral submission, but the inputs we received.
Okay. I see Mr. Honorable Khais, are you coming to arrest you?
not really. I just wondered if Advocate Jenkins is still around. Well, my understanding is that the legislation goes through the cabinet before it's submitted to parliament. Do we regard the departments as part of the public that should have an opportunity also to come to the committee? And so I just wanted clarity on that aspect, because it is my understanding that they were part of the process at a cabinet level and the consultation department to department. Okay, can I just check with the advocate?
Indeed, a very relevant question, Honorable Khais. Jenkins?
Yes, Chair, that's how I understand it as well. We have specific rules when we make committee bills. If we make a committee bill, we have to consult and the department has a right in terms of the rules to make submissions on a committee bill. But when we get a bill from the executive, when a minister tables a bill in parliament, we accept that has gone through a cabinet process where all the, I don't know the clusters that well or the teams or what, but the submissions made there, we take as been done. All we ask for the minister tabling that legislation, that bill, is to say to us, who did you consult? So there it should have been consulted cabinet or consulted Department of Defense specifically, because they are then excluded from certain areas of this amendment bill. So I agree with Mr. Rai. It is like that. But Chair, in the interest of good quality legislation, we should read what the Department of Defense said, and we'll get back to the committee on that one as well. But I agree with the Honorable Member Rai. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Jenkins. I see Mr. Story.
Thank you, Chair. I just last element. We did submit a PDF which had itemized comments inside. We talked to it generally in here, but there are other items in there that, if that could just be considered, that would then make sure that all our points have been fully addressed. I don't know if the Department of Transport saw those comments. And I just refer you to it. I did ensure that was submitted. It wasn't in the original invite that came today, but I did raise it with the secretariat, and I believe that is available for the DOT to peruse so that they have completely covered CASA's comments. Thank you so much.
Okay. Yes, Tribeda.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, indeed, the PDF was sent to the department, and the department, they've, you know, added in their responses. There's an updated presentation that we just sent this morning while the meeting was in progress.
Okay, thanks. I think then, having said that, I think we where we have enough material at our disposal, both from the presentation made by all the presenters, the response given by the department, but also in addition to that, like as Mr. Jenkins has pointed out, for the benefit of getting an angle from why they those two departments also make presentations, we'll have an opportunity to go through those views, and we are looking forward to other areas that were identified by Mr. Jenkins, around which he'll be coming back to the committee to give more sense in terms of areas that were flagged. But having said that, let me then take this opportunity, like I indeed indicated, to, on behalf of the committee, thank all the presenters from Mr. Van Zyl Vredenburg and Mr. Stoor, but also how the department has responded to that through MEMJE, and also inputs and comments that were made by honorable members. Let's then allow the presenters to exit our meeting, so that we are then able
Chairperson, I apologize for interrupting. I did raise my hand, Chairperson.
Oh.
I apologize about that.
Right.
Chairperson, just regarding, if I may,
sorry, yes, you're on the floor. You can
yes, if I may just address on the one issue regarding the submissions made by the Department of Defense regarding Section 15 and the manner in which the clause is drafted. So just to mention that the present format of the clause it's not a drafting error. And we've specified the bill in its present form. And the meaning of the clause is clear from the way it's presently. So we just like to mention that, Chair, in regards to clause 15, section 15 of the bill.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Thanks a lot for that, input. Having said that, then again, thank you. Our guests for those presentations. It will help us a lot in terms of finally taking the matter to the House, so that there is finality in terms of issues raised. But like I indicated, we are much more better informed today than when we came in. Thank you, our guests. Just on the last issue, the minutes of the last meeting, I said let's try to defer them to the next meeting because of the nature of the issues that we dealt with at the last meeting, number of areas that were identified, and we are also waiting for the input from our legal services. We did interact that with the office of Mr. Jenkins, so we are waiting for that. But I thought let's probably give us ourselves time so that we are then able to deal with the minutes in the next meeting. Having said that, honorable members, can I then take this opportunity to formally express on behalf of the committee our gratitude to all of you for having made this meeting a success, from all yourselves, from the committee secretary, the researcher, but more than that, our legal advisors. It is always important to have you around. That's why we panic when you are not around, because now you're we are not well armed in your absence. Thank you, honorable members. The meeting now stands adjourned.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you, Chair. Good day.
Recording stopped. Everyone.